Hello, you're listening to Wait, How Do You Spell That? A Rare Disease Podcast. My name is Colby, and I'm the editor here at Patientworthy. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. We really appreciate it. And today, I'm happy to welcome a very special guest to our show. Christina Robinson is a patient advocate and mother whose son, Axel, was diagnosed with hemophilia A when he was 10 months old. That's a rare bleeding disorder, sometimes called classic hemophilia, that is characterized by excessive bleeding from cuts, unexplained bruising, joint swelling from bleeding, and more. Since her son was diagnosed, Christina has been his number one champion, advocating for hemophilia awareness in her home state and beyond. Christina, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for taking the time today. I'm very glad we could have you on and introduce yours and Axel's story to our audience. And to start with, would you mind giving us kind of an overview of hemophilia A for people who are listening who may not be familiar?
Sure. So hemophilia A, like you said, is a rare bleeding disorder where your blood does not clot properly. There's a clotting cascade, if you will, and you need all of your factors lined up to make a proper blood clot. And hemophilia A is when you are missing factor 8 in that lineup, and therefore the blood does not clot properly.
Gotcha. And as we mentioned in the intro, your son Axel was diagnosed with hemophilia when he was just 10 months old. Can you tell us more about that time in your lives?
Sure. So yes, he was 10 months old, and he was really starting to be more mobile as a typical 10-month-old, and crawling, and you know, everything seemed normal, good, happy 10-month-old baby boy. But he started getting very big bruises on his knees from crawling. And that was our first sign that something was really wrong, because they were not your average bruises for just learning to crawl. Prior to that, everything seemed normal. There were no signs or anything.
Yeah. And hemophilia is almost always an inherited disorder. I know it's something that's usually diagnosed early on in a person's life. Were you aware that this gene was something carried in your family?
I was not. It was a total shock. And still thinking back on his diagnosis, it's still a total shock, because he was diagnosed with the severest level. There are levels of hemophilia, and he was diagnosed with the severest level. So most children with that severity are diagnosed right at birth and will have bleeding episodes even from something as small as a regular baby vaccine. And he did not have any issues. So it was a shock. We did not have any idea that this was something that could be inherited.
And treatment for bleeding disorders has come a long way. The primary course of action for treating hemophilia focuses on replacing that missing clotting factor in the blood. So whatever that might be for the bleeding disorder that someone has. Can you tell us what treatment has been like for Axel, especially considering he's so young?
Sure. You're absolutely right. Treatment has come a long way. And Axel is currently on a newer medication. It's only been on the market for, I believe, 7 years. And it, to me and many people in this community, bleeding disorders community, feels like magic, because typically you are treated with IV infusions that are actually replacing the factor that you are missing to allow your blood to clot. However, Axel's medication is an injection. It's not an IV. It's just an injection very similar to that of maybe a diabetic insulin injection or something like that. And rather than actually replacing the factor that he's missing, this sort of allows his body to mimic the factor. And it has been life-changing. Because he should have been, I originally decided that he would do factor when he was diagnosed, because it seemed more familiar, it seemed more well-known, but he was supposed to have a port, and that surgery for his port didn't go so well, so I was nervous to put him through surgery again. And I, you know, did a lot of research, and this new medication really feels like magic for bleeding disorders. So another huge factor for us that we felt was important in choosing the injection style medication as opposed to the IV infusions is that to infuse him with a port, which is very, very common, but it is also a sterile procedure, which requires a lot more work. It's worth it if your medication is working. Don't get me wrong. And this is not to say that Factor is not the right way to go. It might be the right way to go for somebody else. But for us, it just felt very overwhelming because we have no medical background. We are not nurses. We are not in the medical field. And we found out that the port, giving him an infusion through a port, is a completely sterile medication, sterile procedure. And it requires many more steps. And as you had mentioned, it's a bit longer for a squirmy toddler. And anytime, we didn't know this in the beginning, anytime he were to have a fever over 100.4, it would require a trip to the hospital to have blood cultures done to make sure that it wasn't an infection of the port.
Right.
And, you know, having a 10-month-old, everybody knows they get fevers relatively often that often amount to nothing.
Yeah.
So it felt like very overwhelming. And we just are so thankful that there is a different type of medication out there that for us seems to be totally life-changing, you know, once every other week. As he gets older, if he chooses, he could do it only once a month. And it's just an injection right in his thigh. And that's it. And it's done. And it lasts 10 seconds. And it has been an absolute game changer for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And probably something that's better suited for someone who's only 10 months old. You know, the single injection route. How often does he have to get the injection?
He gets it every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks. So yeah. So yeah. Less time in the chair, less time receiving infusions, you know, that kind of thing. I'd imagine that's especially important for, you know, babies and toddlers not really known for liking receiving shots and things like that. So yeah, that's amazing. What other sorts of changes have you had to make in Axel's life to help accommodate his hemophilia?
So thankfully, because the medication has come such a long way, not a ton at this point. He is still young. You know, we're careful with birthday parties are hard. You know, we're careful with bouncy houses and trampolines and things like that. They're not good for his joints. His doctors have basically advised, like, try to avoid that when you can, but you're his parent. It's your judgment call. So that has been the biggest adjustment is, you know, the like little kid things like that. I do think that going forward, as he gets older, sports will be questionable. There'll be some sports that are just an absolute no, you know, no football, no lacrosse, you know, the hard hitting sports. And, you know, soccer, I think, is allowed, but the doctors have said, you know, as he gets older and maybe if he's really interested in soccer, fine, but, you know, not allowing him to hit the ball with his head. Things like that. But thankfully, we haven't had to make huge accommodations. He can live pretty regularly right now in his young toddler years.
So kind of finding that balance as a parent between mitigating risk for your child while also allowing them to participate in things and, you know, experience life. I know for a lot of rare conditions, I've heard for hemophilia before too, that this is a common conversation, you know, that parents have to have with their children.
Definitely. And I honestly think that the biggest accommodations really are for the parents. I think that hemophilia at these young years is harder on the parents than it is on the child. And I say that because he doesn't have a full grasp of his body or his disease yet. Mm-hmm. You know, he knows he has hemophilia. He knows he gets an injection every other week, But he doesn't really fully grasp that for me, watching him play on the playground is so scary. And I just, everywhere I look, I see danger. I'm like, is he going to fall off of this? Is he going to trip and hit his head? You know, so I would say really the biggest changes, especially in the young years, are for the parents. We need to sit back and take a breath and sort of force ourselves to allow him to be a kid and to play and to do all the things, you know, in a safe way that everyone can do.
Right. Something that's just as important as being aware of these accommodations that need to be made for him. I know you sent over some photos prior to our meeting, which included Axel showing off his medical ID bracelet, which he seems to have taken to wearing.
Yeah, he loves it. It's just a part of who he is at this point. And he does know and understand that it is a medical bracelet and it tells people that he has hemophilia. The doctors suggested that, you know, we put it on him as young as he would be willing. And so we did. And he loves it. It's now part of him. And a few times that we have forgotten to put it back on for whatever reason that we've taken it off, he will, even at just 3 years old, remind me, don't forget to put my bracelet back on. We can't go out without my bracelet, which is adorable. And I also love that he already knows that.
Yeah. No, that sort of responsibility is great. I think I told you before, I used to be an EMT. So, you know, having those sorts of reminders in a medical emergency is paramount. So, yeah, I think that's great. But let's turn to advocacy for a moment. Since Axel's diagnosis, you've been involved with the New England Hemophilia Association and have been participating in that organization's annual walking fundraisers, among other things. Can you tell us about some of the experiences you've had so far as an advocate?
Sure. So I have just loved advocating, mostly because I feel it gives me some type of purpose, if you will. His diagnosis was overwhelming and it was scary. And, you know, like I mentioned, I didn't know that this was a genetic thing. I wasn't familiar with it. So just having a place to really get involved has felt really rewarding. If I can help any other family feel less scared and less overwhelmed, that's wonderful. And, you know, bigger advocacy as far as really being outspoken about the unfair health insurance practices that you run into when you have a child with severe medical needs and stuff are just so important, because I don't think that your average person has any idea that these things even exist. And they don't know that there are these obscure laws that make receiving your medication sometimes impossible. So I just feel really passionate about making sure in any small way, if I can use my voice to get attention, I will.
Mm-hmm. Factors that people who don't have a child with a rare condition or a child with a chronic condition, you know, might not even think about on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
Yeah. I know one of the issues that is close to your heart is advocating for women to be aware of bleeding disorders and their own genetics. Hemophilia is kind of popularly thought of as a disorder that's almost exclusively diagnosed in boys, but that's not really the whole story, is it?
Right. It is not the whole story. Women can have bleeding disorders as well. After Axel's diagnosis, I found out that I am a carrier. My factor levels are at a completely normal level, so I don't have any bleeding issues, thankfully. However, my daughter, Daisy, was diagnosed with mild hemophilia. Her factor levels are considered low enough to have a diagnosis. You know, she does not need medication every 2 weeks the way Axel does. As of right now, she's not restricted from any activities or anything, but her doctors do say that, you know, we need to keep an eye on her through puberty. She may have bleeding issues when she's old enough to start her menstrual cycle. She may have bleeding issues if she needs maybe an oral surgery or any type of other surgery that may come up in her life. And to know that she has this diagnosis is huge, because we can let doctors know and she can be treated ahead of time with the proper medications rather than go in blindly and potentially have something scary happen. But it is very true that even today, there I know many children whose, you know, the boy in the family has hemophilia and has a sister who hasn't even been tested because the doctors just feel, oh, no, this is a boy's disease. She'll be fine. And that's not fair. That's not fair to many, many women out there that have active bleeding issues and they're just not heard or taken seriously.
Right. And I know for Daisy too, this isn't the only recent diagnosis that she's received. You were telling me she was also recently diagnosed with eosinophilic esophagitis, which is another rare condition, which I know also led to discussion for yourself and your health. As you mentioned before, you know, when Axel was diagnosed, that was when you found out that you are also a carrier for hemophilia. So can you tell us more about that, some of these other things that have been going on with your family?
Yep. So you're exactly right. Daisy was just diagnosed EOE for short, which is inflammation of the esophagus. So it is an allergic reaction, basically, but it's, you know, it's different. It doesn't present itself like an anaphylactic shock type of reaction, but she, you know, has been having some major struggles with eating and growing and gaining weight. And I've noticed that she's been very uncomfortable when it comes to eating. And so she was diagnosed with this. And the reason that you mentioned that it was sort of also I had a conversation about my health is because I have always had the same struggles around eating. I just didn't know that it was a real medical diagnosis because, quite frankly, back when I was a kid, it wasn't. So I was happy that I recognized some of Daisy's signs and symptoms because I felt like I knew what she was going through. But I guess I didn't expect her doctor to say, you know, by the way, I think that we should refer you to an adult GI doctor because you 100% have the same diagnosis. So that was interesting, but also kind of good to hear. It sort of connected a lot of dots for my whole life, truthfully.
Yeah. Hearing stories like that always makes me wonder how many people have slipped through the cracks. You know, how many people have had what might be a rare condition that they've just had to live with. And honestly, how many rare diseases wouldn't be considered rare, you know, if we were able to adequately test for them or recognize the signs for what they are?
Yeah, I think that is a very true and fair statement. I couldn't agree with that more.
Do you feel like your experiences with Axel's diagnosis made you better able to know what to do regarding you and your daughter and your own recent health experiences?
Yes, absolutely. I think I just felt so much more comfortable at this point speaking up and not taking no for an answer, so to speak, and really having enough strength to be okay with not agreeing with a doctor, a professional, and really pushing harder for more testing and different testing. Because although Daisy's doctor is wonderful and I totally trust him, doctors tend to take the more mild approach for as long as they can. And I understand it to a point, But I got to a point where I felt not enough was being done. Mm-hmm. And because I had done so much advocacy work with hemophilia and for Axel and with his doctors, I just knew I'm not waiting any longer. No matter what this doctor tells me, I am going to push for more tests and the different tests because we don't have time to wait. And he listened and it was wonderful. And he knew how strongly I felt. And it was great to be able to just comfortably voice that, because I will say, you know, 3 years ago, before I was in this world of being, you know, a medical mom, I don't know that I would have pushed that hard.
Right. That's often an experience I hear about, that people who have children with chronic conditions or rare conditions, you know, they have to get over that hump of maybe the medical professional, the people that we always tend to trust in these situations, aren't, you know, they're not totally familiar with what we might be talking about here. So you have to go that extra mile to make sure that you're doing what's right for your child.
Absolutely. And I also think that it's okay to not agree mm-hmm. with the medical professional, because they only know what they were taught and, you know, to a point what they've experienced maybe with other patients and things, but nobody knows your child the way you know your child. Mm-hmm. So especially with a rare disease, you know, like hemophilia and EoE, both of those diseases can often be invisible until a big issue arises. So, you know, nobody knows your child the way you do, and it's okay to question a medical professional.
Right. So if there's a parent in our audience who is facing a similar diagnosis for their child, hemophilia, EoE, some sort of chronic condition, what advice do you have for them?
My biggest piece of advice would be to find other parents, families, kids, find a community in this space, whether it's bleeding disorders or whatever diagnosis you might have. I know not every diagnosis has a full-blown community the way the bleeding disorders community is. And, you know, we have the New England Hemophilia Association, which is, you know, a huge blessing. I know not everybody has that, but you are not alone. It might be a rare diagnosis. It might be something that truly very few people have, but find those people and talk to them, because having somebody else that really knows firsthand what you're looking at, what you're going through, all the feelings that you might be feeling, it's really helpful. I think for me, it was helpful to just really be able to have these conversations with somebody else that's also actually going through the same thing. Right. And I've been able to find people with hemophilia and EoE. You know, even with Daisy's very recent diagnosis, I have been able to be connected with other parents that are going through the same thing. And most of the time, they're very friendly and willing to say, hey, yeah, my child went through this. Let me give you this little tidbit of advice that maybe you haven't thought of yet. And that is really helpful if you are comfortable enough reaching out to basically perfect strangers. But they might give you some of the best advice that you're ever going to get, even better than a doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think that connection is so important, if only for the fact that you will realize that you're not alone anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Christina, if someone would like to learn more about hemophilia, maybe ways they can help support the community, or maybe keep up with you and Axel are up to, where's the best place for them to do that?
So, as far as hemophilia, the New England Hemophilia Association has a wonderful website and a lot of educational resources available. That is nehemophilia.org. And as far as anyone that might be interested in keeping up with me and Axel and his journey, I actually made an Instagram account solely for the purpose of spreading awareness for the bleeding disorders community. And I share a lot about, you know, what he goes through on a day-to-day basis. And that, you know, that is on Instagram at the.axe.factor. So the Axe Factor, that's always been our walk team for the last 3 years. That's been our team name. So that is now his Instagram name as well. And I share a lot on there. And I actually have found that many parents have reached out to me on that Instagram and said, hey, my child was recently diagnosed and I can't believe I found this Instagram. Can I ask you some questions? So I'm an open book if anyone wants to follow Axel's journey.
That's great. And I absolutely love that username, the Axe Factor. It works on so many different levels. Okay. Well, Christina, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show today. We really appreciate you coming on to share your family and Axel's story.
Thank you for having us.
Of course. And as Christina said, if you'd like to learn more about hemophilia and some of the ways that you can help get involved, you can check out the New England Hemophilia Association website. And if you'd like to follow along with Axel and Christina, you can find them on Instagram, as she said, under the username the.axe.factor. And we'll also leave some links in the show notes to both of those websites for this episode so that you can access those easily. And remember, you can always keep up with the latest in rare disease news by visiting our website at patientworthy.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and more by searching for Patient Worthy on those platforms. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing and leaving us a review on your favorite podcasting platform. Subscribing ensures you'll automatically receive our new monthly episodes as soon as they come out, and a review or rating really does go a long way toward helping us out. Finally, if you have any questions about the podcast or perhaps an idea for a future episode, you can always get in touch with me by sending an email to Colby, that's C-O-L-B-Y, at patientworthy.com. That does it for today's episode. Thank you once again to Christina Robinson for joining me on the show today. And as always, thank you for listening.